Hi, this is Candy Minks in Chicago.
And Eugene Napick in Toronto.
And you've just found The Agency.
Hey, Candy, how are you today?
I'm okay. I've had a very hectic week. I know that we were going to set this meeting up a couple of days ago, but one thing I didn't tell you, because now everything has turned into a potential conversation piece, so I haven't communicated with you. I didn't tell anyone that our car broke down on the way back. And I know that's no surprise to you.
It isn't. You know, when I saw you last week, your car did not sound healthy.
Oh, it didn't? No, it just had such great work done to it recently, too. So that's bizarre. It did sound clunky and everything. Anyway, we were on Highway I-69, just into Michigan, outside of Lansing, and all the gauges went dead, complete power off on the car. So we had to pull over, and, you know, Stag really found that very relaxing, and wait for, you know, a pickup roadside assistance. We got into a little town. I thought about renting a car and getting him back to work, but there was no Uber. The car parts were going to take a day, and the rented car was too far for us to get to unless we hitchhiked. So we got the car fixed up. We get back on the highway on the next day, and 45 minutes later, the power goes right off again. So I've had a bad couple of days. Everything's fine. I'm only going to drive the car in the city.
What was the problem with the car?
Brand new alternator. The second problem was that there was no fans on the alternator after they put the new alternator in. And, you know, belts. Anyway, that's why I was delayed and why it took me so long to get a mic and get organized. But here we are. How's your week?
Well, not quite that hectic. I was out at, getting some antibiotics for our new George this morning.
Oh.
He's had this cut on the pad of his paw, as you know. And it's not healing the way it should. And I'm worried that maybe he's fighting a bit of an infection.
Mm-hmm.
So our vet had given us a prescription for antibiotics. So I got them, gave him his first ones this morning.
Oh, geez. Okay. That's
nice. He's walking okay. We give him, he's got some Blue Jays socks. He's the only Blue Jays fan in Toronto, I think. We put the Blue Jays socks. That's one sock on his foot, and then we tape it up with duct tape.
Do we need to get rid of the elephant in the room or anything? Do you want to tell us about your pets in general? Because there's probably going to be somebody who comes along and doesn't know their names, or that you don't just have a dog.
Oh, it's true. I have 300 pounds of dogs. I have George, who's a brown Newfoundland, and I have Ruby, who's a Landseer, or a black and white Newfoundland. And they're big and furry, and they drool, and they're just lovely animals. And we have 5 3/4 cats.
Okay, 5 3/4. Oh, right. Because
one is a three-legged cat.
There you go.
So we often suggest to our vet that we only want to pay 3/4 of the bill, but that usually doesn't fly.
Right. Okay, fair enough. And if anyone listening hears something smash in the background, it's either my husband walking around Stag or one of the dogs knocking over Eugene. They've knocked me over, so that is a possibility.
Exactly. So noises might come with this podcast. I brewed up some tea for the podcast, by the way.
I should have done that next time. Yeah.
As you know, when you and I first met back in the day, we always drank tea, and we had those Peak Green cookies, the ones with the little bit of red sugary gel.
I know them well because in Loblaws the other day when I was in Toronto at the Maple Leaf Gardens location, there were Peak Greens on the shelf and I resisted buying them. But oh my God, I wanted to bring them back to Chicago.
Oh, they're so good, aren't they?
They are the best.
I read yesterday in the paper a fellow named Rod Connie Bear passed away at age 89. And I know you're going to say, who the heck is Rod Connie Bear?
I most definitely would be wondering who that is.
That's what I thought, too. I didn't know his name. But once I found out who he was, I was really sad because Rod Connie Bear was a part of my growing up.
Oh.
He was the voice of Rusty the Rooster and Jerome the Giraffe.
Oh. I know who you mean. Man, he must have lived a long life.
Usually you do if you get to 89.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's amazing. Because that went off the air in the zeros, didn't it? Or 1999 or something?
It ran from 1958 to 1985.
Oh, you've done some homework. All right.
I have. And, you know, I had to listen to the opening track. Of course, it's available on YouTube. I had to listen to the opening track of Friendly, you know, at the beginning when you see his boot and he goes, look up.
It's the best.
Way up.
Best.
And I was thinking about it, not just because Rod Conybeare died, but because, you know, they did this show with just a script outline, and they just had these wonderful conversations that went on for all of those years. And I thought, what a great model for a
fantastic
podcast.
Oh, what a great idea. And you know what, why don't we link that YouTube link on our Facebook page, which is theagency.podcast at Facebook. So we'll definitely get that loaded up after we finish this podcast. We'll put that on our Facebook page for anyone who doesn't have a clue.
Well, or for anyone who's younger than...
Younger or from another country. Yes, exactly.
Or another, and maybe another planet.
Or another planet, yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's true, but I had heard that at the end of every show when Friendly played early one morning on the recorder, that he did it live for all those years.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. I remember obsessing...
But I could see him doing it.
Yeah, I do too. But, you know, there were slight things that were different in different episodes, even in the closing with the cow, or else I'm insane. Because I thought there was are so hypervigilant, you know, watching every moment. So maybe I'm imagining that. I don't know. We'll have to find that out.
We'll check
we can
it
do that. I always do that in the fix-it section next week.
So we get comfortable before he started the show. I like
totally.
That.
Well, it's kind of what we're doing.
That's right. We have tea. Yeah. I have tea. You don't have tea.
You have tea. And next time I will. I was in such a panic, such a stomach ache. I had to take a friend to a clinic this morning. Also, I'm adding to this. I didn't mean to take so much time checking in with you this week. My car story took too much time. But I also had to prime an electric guitar for Stag because he's painting it to auction off for fundraising at his work downtown where he works. Nice. So I guess we can say Hard Rock, but, you know. I don't see that as a problem. But anyway, that's what he has to do. And then, of course, I found out that it takes a week for the primer to dry. But details.
I can't wait to see it. That'll be really, really excellent. He'll do a great job on it.
Should be interesting. So speaking about
music.
Yes.
I have a question for you. And this was sparked by... I heard something on the radio the other day about some pop star was suing some other pop star for stealing their melody.
Oh, okay.
Why? My question for you is, why is it okay for folk musicians to use and reuse melodies at will and call it the folk music process?
Right.
But if pop performers do it, there's lawsuits.
Right. And the thing is, it is all right for pop artists to play each other's songs. They just can't record them or get money for them or play them in public. So they can play each other's songs around a campfire just like you and I can. And well, they probably do.
But we're not just talking about one another's.
No, right.
Song.
So
we're talking about, for instance, George Harrison's My Sweet Lord sounding suspiciously similar to He's So Fine by the Chiffons.
Right. I have one word for you. It's called lawyers.
Well, I guess
lawyers
sure,
have to make their money. Lawyers. And God forbid if the lawyers don't and the record companies don't get their money, because you know all that suing isn't going to the artist at all. It goes to the record companies and to the lawyers. It doesn't go, it's not like if Cardi B has her riff stolen by Nicki Minaj or something. It's not going into Cardi B's pocket when somebody else uses it. It's going into the record companies. Unless those pop stars have, and rappers and hip hop artists have got a contract where it goes directly to them. Look at Kesha. Her money goes to she has to share it with a rapist. So, you know, it's a corrupt business.
Yeah, or it also some performers are just extra cool. For instance, Lady Gaga's monster hit Born This Way is awfully similar to Madonna's Express Yourself, don't you think?
Madonna fans would tell you that. Yes, they would. Absolutely.
And Madonna, apparently, her response to that was, it's amusing, flattering, and well done.
There you go. That I think that's the best response.
It's pretty interesting. Even in folk music, though, where it's cool for Woody Guthrie to take Wabash Cannonball and turn it into Grand Coulee Dam. And I consider them different songs that share the same melody.
Right.
But even in folk music, there's a strange search for authenticity, which really perplexes me sometimes.
Yeah, well, I think that's a spiritual bankruptcy. That's part of the whole spiritual bankruptcy that our society has right now. That's just one aspect of it. It's funny because Future was on Andy Cohen one night a couple of years ago, and Andy asked him, listen, it's a rumor out there that you wrote Drunken Love. And Future said, no, I don't know anything about it. You know, Beyonce and Jay-Z, they're doing what they do, and I'm cool. And I thought that was very interesting. He didn't call it out. I think you can find his song on YouTube and you can hear Drunken Love and there's some kind of connection there, but he did not bust them. He just let it go. And I thought that was an interesting thing. It meant that he knows he can write more songs. I don't know if that's good in the whole big picture, but I just like the fact that even Madonna was saying it's flattering. I'm surprised that she said that. It's impressive that you've got more songs than you. You've had your time. That song made money. If it sounds the same, let it go. But I mean, in terms of the folk music, those things were not protected by copyright, and they were meant to bring people together. When I worked at Old Town, one of the custodians there, she went back to her country in Europe with her kids, and she came back and she showed me this video, and I was deeply moved because she showed her kids who had never met their cousins or their family, and they were all doing these folk dances together. And they didn't have to get trained. They had the same dance in the United States in Chicago as they did back in Estonia.
Yes.
Well, we have, I was the like, same, that's amazing.
We have the same thing with old-time music. As you know, I play banjo, old-time
yes.
banjo,
yes.
Clawhammer style. And we have a repertoire that when you play old-time music, everybody learns the repertoire. And a lot of these tunes will go back to the 20s, and some go back as far as the American Civil War even. But right. there's also a whole set of newer tunes. A fellow I know down in Virginia calls them hippie old time. And an example is, you mentioned Old Town. Mm-hmm. Steve Rosen, who teaches there, wrote a song called Nail That Catfish to a Tree. And just about every time I'm at an old time jam, that comes up. And I didn't even know for the longest time that that wasn't a traditional song.
That's
that,
amazing. You know, that's really cool. You know, that's really cool. He is a talented guy and a really nice guy. Hi, Steve, if you're out there listening. Yeah, no, that's a really cool thing. I think that's a whole thing, is that it used to be that all of the that music was community. It was for the community. It was for us to hang out, pass the time away, keep ourselves busy, and entertain each other and tell stories through it. And it's still that, but it's also part of the control system. You know, it's part of where people can feed off of it and make it into a corporate entity, which they've long ago did, you know, as soon as they could.
Doc Watson, who's beloved as an acoustic flat picking guitar player, when he was discovered by the folk music establishment, he was playing rockabilly guitar on a Les Paul. And although he knew all those old tunes, that isn't what he was doing. And right. so even in folk music, which strives to be so authentic, well, there's this whole marketing business going on there, you know? And even the name old-time music, that was invented by a record company in the 20s, OK Records, because
funny.
They
that's
wanted
hilarious.
To market
sure.
music of Fiddlin' John Carson. And they had been calling it hillbilly music, and they didn't think that was the best name for it. So
maybe a little derogatory. That's amazing.
Yeah, just a little bit. So they decided to call it old time.
What year was that? What year?
It was in the 20s. I don't know which year.
That's interesting, because it's amazing that that was considered inappropriate back then. And it's funny because Steg and I watched this show, State of the Culture, with Joe Budden, a rapper. And they often talk about this co-op, musicians, appropriation of culture, how does a musician get back their music and get back their paycheck? Most people are very young when they go into the business and they're desperate. And they'll sign something and not even know, even with their parents. You know, I know that Kesha, I think her mother was involved in it. So these things still happen. There's a rumor out there that David Bowie bought back his own music, and the Beatles and Michael Jackson bought back their own music, because they had it all ripped off of them and they weren't getting the royalties that they probably deserved.
It's a time-honored tradition.
Yes, it is.
To screw over the artist, right?
Which reminds me of something else. I'm going to totally funny that you mentioned marketers, because I'm not sure marketers are always such a bad thing. I think there's bad marketers and good marketers, and there's ethical people and there's spiritually bankrupt people.
Sure, of course.
Which I suppose Mad Men was trying to deal with. But we saw a movie the other day called Fast Food. No, what was it called? Super Size Me 2. So it's a sequel to the
Son of Super Size Me.
Yeah. Hey, did you see the first one?
No, I did not.
Oh, it's very, very good. I can't believe you haven't seen that. It's excellent. Well, last night, I just wanted to go. We went to go see some movies at Gene Siskel Film Center, which is an incredible facility made by partly by Roger Ebert when his friend died. But downtown, right downtown, we can just take the pink line there. So I was dubious, but I thought I better see some movies because I've got to get back on the track and get some movies going. We were just doing car breakdowns and stuff. So there we go. And it turned out to be an incredible movie. And the premise is that this fellow who had eaten McDonald's or fast food for 30 days and then recovered, now his new project was he was going to start a chicken farm and his own restaurant and find out instead of. And I thought this isn't going to be that interesting. It was incredible because he got his hands dirty, got right in there, bought these chickens. And of course, you find out that there's only 4 or 5 chicken companies in the whole world that give you the baby chicks, the eggs and the baby chicks. You can't get them from anybody else.
That doesn't surprise me.
These companies are controlling the feed that you get. They give you the feed. They come and check your property and just tell you whether or not you've got the right lights or this or that, or have you upgraded it? It's not necessarily the food inspection company. It's these corporations. And he, at one point, gets a letter, an email forwarded to him from a fellow who thought he'd heard, look out for this guy, Morgan Spurlock. He's going to be out there and he's going to make us look like fools. Watch out for him. Don't talk to him. Let us know if he comes to your town to try and buy chickens or a chicken coop. And by chicken coop, I mean a huge thing. Sure. And so this email was forwarded to him and exposed that this guy was after him and warning the corporate, you know, warning people not to get involved with him. It's an incredible movie. He lands up opening a fast food restaurant and he hires these cool marketers. I don't know if they're 25 or 30, looked really cool. And they were kind of trendy and funny. And they make him all kinds of signage for his place. And he puts pictures on the table of the chickens' lifestyles. And it's not nice. And his chickens live probably better than other chickens. And they were bred to be gain weight and be killed in 5 weeks rather than 20 weeks or 8 weeks, right? Which is a normal chicken lifestyle. Yeah. So it's a great movie and I highly recommend it. And the marketers were really fun because they said, really good chicken, too good to be true. And the premise being that this whole restaurant had signage everywhere telling you all the facts about what these chickens went through. And he opened it in Columbus, Ohio. And I just really recommend that movie. I thought he did a great job.
Speaking of chickens.
And I never want to eat chicken again.
When we visited Vietnam, we saw KFC outlets in Vietnam, and apparently they're quite popular throughout Asia.
Well, I can see that crispy chicken. I mean, that's what everybody wanted. They didn't want grilled chicken, which was healthier in this movie. Everybody said they wanted crispy chicken. It's extremely satisfying. I can't remember what Margaret Visser said, the Canadian anthropologist. She said something like the reason fast foods are so popular is because people do want to know exactly what they're getting when they're going to a restaurant. I like being surprised sometimes. You know, you mentioned Chick-fil-A. They talked about Chick-fil-A a little bit, and he said I don't recommend going for dinner there with your gay friend or opening up a business with your gay partner. You know, I don't like to eat at fast foods because I think that they are based on the model of profit over people and profit over animals. I would eat falafel, by the way. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I add some context for our audience? The reason why we were talking earlier about Chick-fil-A is because they just opened an outlet in Toronto the other day.
Right.
And there were lots of protesters down there, and then there were also lots of people lined up, and I heard a rumor that that some of the people in line were just going back in line over and over again. Don't know if it's true.
Oh, funny. Was what's his name, Ford, there?
Huh, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise
Stephen me. Harper was probably there. I mean, you know, I can guess some of the famous people that would go there.
It's good to see that Kensington is still Kensington.
Right.
Sure, it's changed. It's changed a lot, but it still has retained a lot of character, and it isn't filled with places you'd see in a mall, where if you go to Queen West in Toronto, it's like walking through Yorkdale Mall going on Queen West. It's, I don't even recognize it anymore.
Right, right. They still have some boutiques and little restaurants, but you're definitely right. It's very corporate. I mean, the rent's too expensive. Who else is going to rent it? Even when I first came to Chicago, Michigan Mile had some charming boutique stores. I mean, yes, Victoria's Secret is very pretty. Some of these, you know, Tiffany's, that's all very pretty. But they had almost regular, nondescript corporate stores down there. Now it's AT&T. It's the cell phone stores. How can that be interesting? How can that be a tourist destination to go down and look at AT&T? I can do that anywhere. But, sure. You know, it used to be like a place where Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn would go shopping when I first got here. Now, it's still got that vibe with the buildings and the architecture. But, you know, sometimes it's very disappointing when it's just tourist T-shirts and not cute, funky boutiques or something, you know?
I remember on Queen West here in Toronto when there used to be that goth bar.
Sanctuary.
Yeah, on the north side, it used to have like the dress code, no nice sweaters.
Yes.
Right? And then it became a Starbucks, you know. And I often think that when that Starbucks opened, that was the beginning of the end of that street.
Definitely.
As what I knew it as, you know, yeah. When I lived down in the area.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was in the Rex the other day, and it was still really nice band playing there and very homey, felt like old. I mean, it was packed. I was impressed where I don't remember it being packed. And the Black Bull has renovated the patio and it looks beautiful, but it still felt like the Black Bull and it still felt like the Rex. And they had a live band playing there, kind of a, I don't know if it was swing or jazz. It was, you know, a combination of the two. And they were a really good band. I wish I had remembered what their name was. Sorry.
Yes, I think it's okay to give bands some plugs around here if we're out to see them.
Yeah. Did you have a particular topic or anything you wanted to talk about today? We discussed that kind of format, or have we kind of been going there or anything? Did you have something up your sleeve today?
Well, I wanted to talk about folk music versus pop music and the idea of plagiarism and authenticity.
Right. I think we can probably revisit it. I mean, for me, that hints to something that's very near and dear to my heart is originality. What is it and why do people have a fetish with it? I don't have a thing. Something doesn't have to be original. When something is innovative and I haven't seen it before, I will admit that I do love that feeling, that aha, the feeling of being dislocated and you go into this pure kind of feeling of surprise. So that might be why people want original. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else would describe original giving you that feeling, like if you go to another country or culture shock or something takes you by surprise, a taste of food. But when people say original or authenticity, I really wonder what that means. It seems to be more about what they believe than about the actual philosophical or reality of authenticity or originality.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I think so too.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you was, and I feel terrible, you're talking about all these beautiful things like folk music, and what else did you talk about? Oh, what was the TV show called? Gentle Giant?
The Friendly Giant.
Friendly Giant, right? I feel terrible. I wanted to ask you something, and you can definitely delete it if you don't want to talk about it, but listen, if you had lived, there was a serial killer in Toronto and he killed several people and then he buried their bodies in people's gardens and in around their property. Would you still live there?
Oh, live on the property?
Yeah. Yeah. If this Bruce MacArthur had buried some of his victims in planters on these people's property in Leaside, would you stay there?
I don't know, Candy. I don't know. I think I would find it really creepy for sure.
Yeah. I've been thinking about it, and I actually was asked this in the summer by my daughter asked me, and we're driving, and I started thinking about it, and I said, you know what? I think I would stay there. First of all, those fellows moved from another country, and they had been persecuted or felt that they couldn't be gay, and they came to this country hoping they could have a relationship and hoping they could have a better life in Canada. I said this country, I forgot where I was. You know what I mean? They came to Toronto and they wanted to be able to be who they were. And they went on dates with somebody and they were very, very trusting. This guy used, abused, was sick, killed them. Then I think the people who owned the houses were also victims. One of my theories is that this guy, Bruce MacArthur, had owned his own house and lost it in some kind of maybe a market crash or something. I think he secretly had resentment for these homeowners in Leaside who had really nice houses, and he did not have that anymore, and he had it. And I think he was sticking it to them, too, in some sick way.
You don't think it was just a convenient place to...
I think there... I don't know. I think there was also a little, fuck you, I'm going to stick it to you, too. I do. That's just my opinion. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's part of what I think. So I'm thinking, if that was my house and those guys had moved to Canada and they came there to have things, I'd like to believe that in my garden they had a little bit of rest, and I'd like to honor them, and not, it's not their fault they were put there. It's not their fault they were murdered, and I'd like to believe that maybe I gave them a little bit of a reprieve and a place to rest. I mean, I know they're buried properly now. I'd like to look at it that my garden had been a way station for them. So I think I would stay there. I might burn some candles and get someone to come in and do a spiritual healing or smudging or something. I don't know what that would be, but I might do something like that. And I also, then I thought, when I thought, oh, I was going to ask you about this, I thought, has anybody interviewed those people? Well, in fact, there were a couple of CBC stories, which I found crazy interesting. Not only
did they say?
They said, first of all, the way he got involved with them was that he asked a favor through a friend if he could store his tools at their house. And in turn, he would barter with them to cut their lawn. And they said, great. It turns out that he was even better than that. He went and bought the planters, planted flowers in them, and left them there very generously. Isn't he a nice guy? At their property. That made me really sick to my stomach. And I thought, what a freaking asshole. You know, in the United States, we might call them a sociopath. I like Canada. Canada, we call them assholes. This homeowner couple was interviewed, and they said, he's not going to destroy a life we enjoy thoroughly. We don't back down. The house didn't do it. We didn't do it. And I thought that was such a cute Canadian attitude. Mine was more spiritual or, you know, poetic or something. And whatever, I was thinking about the ghosts living there, that they stayed with me for a while. But I loved it. They're like, we don't back down. I'm like, that is Canadian. Don't let that guy ruin your life.
I'd like to think that I would think that. But at the same time, you know, I think we don't like to have creepy stuff around us if we could avoid it, and I don't know how much that is imprinted on me, you know, how I would really feel about that if I were living in one of those houses. I really don't
totally
know
fair. I know that is really fair. I guess it would have to happen to really know what happened, if you would feel it. I mean, I'm sitting here going like, no, I would stay, but maybe I'd be creeped out as anything, because I do know that at one point, you know, when I was a kid, I used to love to go into houses. I thought they were ghosts there or creepy. And then if you move into a place and you're like, did someone die here? You know, I've had many friends that would ask that. You know, you start thinking, what if you found out? But you know what? Guess what? I also found out, my daughter sent me a link saying that, because we had been talking about this, that there's a TV show coming that is going to combine true crime with house renovations.
That doesn't surprise me.
Isn't that hilarious? I guess it's coming out soon. I don't remember the name of it, but I thought that was pretty impressive and also depressing, because how many murders do we have that we now can have a decorating show about it or something, you know?
Well, here in Toronto, and I don't know if it's so elsewhere in Ontario or Canada or anywhere else, but if anything happens on a property and you're selling it, the real estate agent has to declare that, has to...
Full disclosure, yeah. I did know that. I think it's here too. I don't know where I heard that, but I thought somebody here told me. So yeah, that's another reason you might as well stay in your house, because it's going to lose property value if that's something you care about for your kids or investment. I imagine that you think 20 years down the line, it won't be so creepy to the next people that come along.
Right.
Maybe.
Well, you know, a number of years ago when I was in the working world, the workaday world, as I like to call it, I met somebody who bought a house in a new community, and she and her husband Asian, Chinese. Mm-hmm. And when they bought the house, the numbers of the houses hadn't been assigned. Mm. And when they assigned the numbers, they were given an unlucky number. I think it was number four. I don't know too much about that numerology, but I think it was four. And it was turned out to be a real problem, not only because culturally that was a very unfortunate number for them, but also practically they had difficulty selling their house after because it was a community in which mostly people who were Asian Canadians lived, and they didn't want to buy that number.
Well, I understand that. I think that's totally valid, and I think that the city of Toronto or anywhere should change numbers and find a way to accommodate that so that everyone, I mean, I know it sounds weird, but I think there is something to numbers. We almost called this podcast The Numbers. That's how seriously I take numbers and enjoy them. And I think that there are some spiritual associations and religious associations with numbers. And then of course, superstition. Although I know everybody would say religion is superstition, or a lot of people would, but I think that there's got to be some way around that, that the city, any city could help you change it to a number that you felt you could live with. Even if it doesn't make any sense, why not?
I think it's okay to say, by the way, that what sparked the idea of calling this podcast The Numbers is that we both live on numerical streets in different cities.
True. And I went with that, but I also look at a lot of numbers in artwork and in poetry. So I was right away into it. Plus, I don't know, I didn't want to tell you, but one of the main reasons I really liked it is there's a card game called The Numbers. It's a gambling game considered to be associated with very poor working class. And I thought, how perfect is that? But it didn't stick with us. And then one of my coworkers said, no, it's too much like The Matrix. Not that that's a problem, but it might sound like you're trying to be talking about The Matrix or something. So it turned out
I was mostly worried that people would think it was a podcast about accounting.
Right. And we would be the wrong planning or something. You've come to
the
wrong
people. Sure, there are podcasts out there for people who want to learn about financial planning.
Right. But, I probably should be one of them. I should go learn about financial planning, but I have never done that.
Interesting you said that, because I'm going to be taking a course coming up this month.
Oh my God. No wonder it was on your mind.
To learn a little bit about investing and that kind of thing, because I don't know very much about it, you know. We've always been extremely conservative in terms of risk taking with what resources we have, right?
Right.
And we haven't done much investing at all, and so I don't really know much about it, but so I'm going to learn a little bit.
Okay, cool. I know nothing about it. I mostly, and I should qualify this, I don't know very much about most things, and most things important. Like, I don't know anything about geography. So I think when you get passionate about learning about accounting or something, I feel like my eyes would glaze over right away, even while you were saying it. I was kind of like, no, that's good. That's good.
But well, I expect I'm going to be bored out of my mind when I take this. But
right, bored and rich.
I'm hardly going to be rich, but I'm going to see if I can learn a little bit about that kind of business.
I love it. I love it. And
I'm going to give a little plug to the TDSB, the Toronto District School Board. I'm taking this class through them, but I've also taken other classes, Tai Chi classes, for instance, but also I go on these nature walks with a naturalist, Miles Hearn, that are the most marvelous things.
I love this. And this is adult education?
It's adult education, yeah.
Doesn't it sound dirty? I love it, adult education.
yeah, really. And what we do, there's no classrooms.
Okay.
We meet up at different locations and we go for a walk and we talk about the stuff we see around us.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is the most fantastic thing. And I'm sure I'll be talking more about that in future episodes of the agency, because we're starting a new round of them coming up soon, I think on the 18th.
Fantastic. Well, I've taken a couple of adult education classes, and one of them was helping women not be intimidated by mechanics. And that has helped me so much. I looked under my hood and I saw there were no fans belts on my thing right away on my brand new alternator, you know? So
I can't believe that they would set that thing up and not do it properly. That's
terrible. I will tell you that they are so incredible. They may have broken. They think maybe it had broken. But I got to tell you something. I would love to say their names, but I don't want to also maybe make people afraid of them. But they were fantastic. Everybody we met in Michigan was amazing. And this service station, of course, because I called him 45 minutes later and he couldn't believe it. He's like, can you see the alternator? I'm like, I can see the alternator. There's no fan belts on it. He got us a hotel. Of course he did. He had to. He got us the tow truck and he got us the repairs done. So I think he did the right thing.
That's a pretty class act.
I thought it was a super class act. I really feel fantastic about it. And, you know, we're sending him a letter or a little painting or something. You know, I mean, he got like hundreds of dollars from us, but we're also maybe going to send him a postcard.
Lansing, Michigan?
Lansing, Michigan.
You know, just outside of Lansing, there's a little town, and I digress here.
Please don't tell me it's called Olivet. I know that town. I was trying to rent a car there.
Olivet, Michigan is a college town. Okay. And at that college every year in June is the Midwest Banjo Camp, my favorite banjo camp. It's the only banjo camp I've been to, but I've been there three times.
Oh, very nice.
And every year in June, hundreds of banjo and fiddle and guitar freaks show up and learn from the best players really anywhere. Of that kind of music, and it's a marvelous thing, and it's lovely little town as well. One of the things I like to do there is when I'm not learning or jamming, is to just walk around the town because it's a beautiful place.
Love it. I love that. That's great. I love that. Yeah, Michigan people so friendly. At least at least the ones we met so friendly, so nice. We stayed in two spots overnight, so I think we got full exposure.
I had no idea that you had
I wasn't going to tell you. But then I was like, please don't be mad at me because I'm so slow in getting my microphone up and getting home. And I mean, I missed so many appointments last week. Steak missed two nights of work and blah, blah, blah. And that's just what happens. So no more highway driving for Candy with the Midnight Blue Hoppy.
Oh, is that why you asked whether we liked our car?
No, it is why, but we'd already been recommended that car. That is why I asked if I liked your car. And, you know, I want to be able to sleep in a car if I have to, traveling.
Sure.
Just to lay down and rest. What else have we got to talk about? We've got a Facebook page and we have an email address. If anyone's out there listening, our email is theagency.podcast@gmail.com. Are you okay with that?
Agency.podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We would love to hear comments from listeners, if we have any listeners out there.
Mm-hmm.
Hear what you think, what you'd like to hear us talk about.
Mm-hmm. And also, maybe in the future, we can make a little feature that someone can leave us a message with a story, you know, like a minute or two audio for us, too. We could figure out something like that. Maybe. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know if that's possible.
That would be great. That would be fun. Yeah. One of the good things is we're starting this out and we really don't have any rules, so it can go in a number of directions. Correct. You know, I would like to throw out a little bit of shameless self-promotion, if I
good.
May.
Good.
I play in an old time music duo called Jack Antler with a fellow named Ted Myerscough. Ted plays guitar and I play clawhammer banjo, and we're going to be busking on Saturday the 14th at the Arts on the Credit Fine Art Tour in Mississauga, and fantastic. We're going to be at 161 Lakeshore Road West, somewhere in that building.
I love it.
It's called Clark Hall. We've been invited to busk there for 4 hours, 12 to 4, and then the following week on the Sunday the 22nd at 12:30, we're going to be playing one set at the Long Branch Tree Fest, which is located in Marie Curtis Park in Long Branch.
I love it. That's fantastic.
And Long Branch is the farthest southwest corner of the amalgamated city of Toronto you can get before stumbling into Mississauga.
Very good. I think also we both have blogs and we both have Patreon pages. I don't know if you have one, but you certainly, if you want to see a little bit of background in my world, I'm Candy Minx at Patreon. And we both have blogs. Mine's The Gnostic World of Candy Minx. I show up there every now and then. I'll certainly be showing up and posting pictures of anything relevant that we do on this podcast. And we have a Facebook page and you can definitely reach out to us.
Absolutely. And my blog is called 27th Street. Great. And it's at 27thstreet.me. That's 27thstreet.me.
Fantastic. And don't worry, if you put Gnostic World of Candy Minx, you'll find me.
Absolutely. I think there's only one Gnostic Minx that I know.
All right. I don't know. What are you thinking? Are we, do you want to tell me any plans you have this week? Do we try to aim a movie together? I thought about seeing that Peanut Butter Falcon, but we just didn't get it together to see it. And right now, when we were looking for movies, they're all horror movies. I'm like, oh, this looks like a great movie, and it's a plot, and then it's like sheer horror. You know, everybody's dying and zombies and bloodshed. I used to love those movies, but I get too scared now.
Peanut Butter Falcon may not be at all the theaters. I don't know if it's a big release, although it has some big stars in it.
Right. It was in a couple of theaters. They were just hard to get to yesterday, but we may try and go in a couple of days. Anything else you want me to check out, or do you want to just surprise me next week?
I think I'll surprise you next week.
I love it.
So for now, we're going to sign off. This is The Agency wishing you a good week, and we'll be back at you next week.
All right. Awesome. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.